Good morning and welcome to the Friday edition of The Current. I'm Lyndon McIntyre. Right now, I'm going to ask listeners to picture in your minds the entire continent of South America. It's an immense, rugged landmass with impenetrable rainforest, but underneath the rock and rubber trees is one of the world's largest sources of natural gas, especially under parts of Venezuela. So imagine connecting the top of the continent to the bottom with what would be the longest natural gas pipeline on the planet. That's the dream of three of the most influential countries in the region, and last year Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil got together to propose just that possibility. To say it's ambitious is an understatement. We're talking about something that's about 8,000 kilometers long, 6,300 kilometers longer than the proposed Mackenzie Valley Pipeline in northern Canada. And while the plan has its critics, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has always had a dream of making South America and its fuel independent of international influence, especially the American kind. Here's Hugo Chavez speaking at a press conference last December.
We need to look to the south first. Caracas, Buenos Aires, a first axis. Caracas, Brasilia, another axis. Brasilia, Buenos Aires, and then Buenos Aires, Montevideo. And there will be other alliances in the region, but that depends on political change.
That was Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez speaking back in December of last year. It isn't by chance that President Chavez calls this pipeline project the beginning of what he calls a South American consensus, something that could economically link the continent's countries. Using that consensus term is seen as a direct challenge to what Washington watchers have called the Washington Consensus, referring to a free trade area for the Americas and a whole lot of other conservative things on the conservative agenda. And it was supposed to partly extend NAFTA from Alaska to Patagonia. Some observers now say that the pipeline points to a Latin America poised to exclude the American political and economic influence from the region. To help us sort through the rhetoric and to put the proposed pipeline into a continental and global context, I'm joined by Jonathan Knitson. He's a political economist at York University in Toronto, but this morning he's in Montreal. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Lyndon.
Now, Hugo Chavez is saying that it's going to unite Latin America, build a strong, independent economy throughout the region. How likely is that?
Well, I'm not sure what exactly is meant by independence in the global context of the 21st century. But if independence means patterns of trade, it has to be put in some historical context. Historically, Latin American trade was mainly with countries outside of the region. So just to compare it, for example, to Asia, in the early 1980s, Asia has traded about 20 to 25% of its exports and imports with countries in Asia, and the remaining 75% with countries outside of Asia. And the numbers were similar for Latin America. Now, if we fast forward to the present, Asia is trading presently 40 to 45% within its own region, whereas Latin America has deteriorated down to about 15%. So the two regions have gone really in different directions, and what Hugo Chavez is proposing is perhaps a reversal of the direction in Latin America. And if this is going to be dependent on oil, this will be difficult to achieve, because Latin America traditionally exported commodities, where Asia is increasingly exporting manufactured goods.
Are we getting a political idealism a little bit mixed up with economic realism here?
If you want to use the terminology of economics and politics, I suppose you can say that they are mixed. They're always mixed.
Uh-huh. Now, this is supposed to be a way to make Latin America less dependent on the United States, and we all know our history. America has been pretty active down there over the decades. Will it work?
It's to some extent, I think, ironic that in Latin America they now speak about independence from the United States. Venezuela has experienced capital flight for the past 30 or 40 years, and for the first time in its history it has capital inflow. The Venezuelan country amassed about $30 or $35 billion in foreign reserves recently, and almost all of it is due to a massive increase in the price of oil. Many of us remember still that the price of oil was around $10.99, and now it's about $70. Mm-hmm. Now, prices have risen primarily because of what is happening in the Middle East. In other words, because of the immense instability that is instigated by the U.S. invasion to Afghanistan and Iraq. So in many ways, Chavez is riding a wave that is steered by United States policies, very far from Latin America. So he's very dependent on the exact policies that he's criticizing.
So you seem to be raising some issue about the wisdom of hanging your future economic hopes on commodities as volatile as oil and gas.
Well, I don't want to really predict the future, and it's entirely possible that oil and gas will remain very expensive for the foreseeable future. You know, many countries, particularly in the Middle East, have put their hopes on that particular commodity, and I'm just wondering whether they succeeded in solving their social problems because of their riches. Some would argue that the opposite has been the case. So both socially and the previous person you interviewed indicated the ecological concerns. You know, hinging your hopes on the further development of natural resources, particularly oil, is of great concern if you are really concerned with social issues, I think.
Now, we've been hearing about the Washington Consensus for a long time, and the Washington Consensus involves more than Washington. It's been going on since Ronald Reagan's time, and it has now included a lot of the world. And I'm just wondering how realistic it is for a few countries in Latin America to attempt to set up a different model.
Well, I think history is very humbling, and it's always surprising us. So I wouldn't discount any attempt to change the world, even from sort of a very modest beginning. But the question is not so much the Washington Consensus. I think the question is the capitalist consensus. And there are different models of capitalism around the world, and many countries share resistance to U.S. politics and U.S. influence, but they do not necessarily share resistance to capitalist principles. And I'm just wondering if we are not going to see an alternative model of capitalism perhaps developing in Latin America rather than an alternative to capitalism, and that remains to be seen.
Because the sort of the general perception is of a so-called pink tide, a leftward lurch in Latin America, and particularly those three countries. Are you suggesting that this is an oversimplification of reality?
Frankly, I must admit that I'm not really qualified to answer the question in detail, because I'm really not knowledgeable enough of the, you know, contemporary currents in Latin America. But I would look for two main changes in order to conclude that indeed there is a change. One change is a fundamental change in the nature and pattern of ownership in the region. And we haven't seen that happening in any significant way. I think, if anything, it operated on a different trajectory altogether. It went towards privatization. The other deeper question, I think, is a question of a new cosmology, a new social cosmology. In other words, what is being taught at the business schools in Caracas and Sao Paulo? Is it different? Will it be different than what is being taught, say, at Yale and Harvard University? If it is the same thing, then this pink tide is more of a rhetoric rather than a real thing.
I'm wondering if they go ahead and Latin America sort of creates some kind of a high wall between itself and the United States. United States has a voracious appetite for petroleum products. Where does that leave us as Canadians? We have our own resource wealth here.
Well, Canada is similarly a free rider on this boom in oil prices as well as in commodity prices. And perhaps, Canada could take some example of Chavez's attempt to think and rethink the way that the world is going. It has an ability to actually make some contribution because of that wealth. And I think Chavez's rhetoric, let alone or leave aside the actual actions, are making a lot of people think. So maybe Canada can take an example. I just wonder if Stephen Harper sees it in the same way. I doubt it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Jonathan, and we'll be following. Jonathan Knudsen is a political economist at York University, but this morning he was in Montreal. Thanks again.